Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is Pittsburgh Works. It is a Tuesday night. I'm Eddie Crow. With me tonight from the Elder Law Attorney Group, Zachariah and Brown. I've got Ben Urso with me, and I've got Jennifer Biddle with me. And it's good to see both of you again. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, been a little bit. So how are you?
I'm all right.
Doing well. That's good.
Doing real well. I want to start with a very basic, simple question, and that will lead me to my other dumb questions that I so often ask.
Yeah.
Explain what it is an elder law attorney does.
Right. So yeah, elder law, if any of you are not familiar with this term, or maybe you've heard this term and you don't have any idea what it is, elder law basically is the legal practice of long-term care planning and estate planning for older adults with a focus on what we call public benefits planning and the related inheritance tax, estate tax consequences that go along with it. And basically what we mean by public benefits, a large part of what we deal with is called Medicaid. Most individuals out there are probably familiar with that term, Medicaid or medical assistance, as it's called in Pennsylvania, especially for individuals that are going to a nursing home or need care in their own home.
Right.
We do a lot of planning for those individuals so they can get the care that they need while they don't lose their house and their life savings and their IRAs and that kind of thing. So,
what's the difference between Medicare and Medicaid?
Medicaid, well, they're both types of government health insurance programs. Medicare is the program that you can go on for anybody when you're 65 years old. That there's basically Medicare Part A and Medicare Part B. That basically is just health insurance, and that's available really to everybody. For all intents and purposes, there's really no income and asset tests that go along with that, relatively speaking. For Medicaid, it's not that way. So there are income and asset tests and limitations that go along with this program. And for our purpose, there's Medicaid or community Medicaid, which is available to individuals from 18 to 65. And essentially the type of Medicaid we deal with is more for older adults or disabled individuals who, like I said, are in need of long-term care. So, and it's so like I said, Medicaid is means tested. That's what we call for individuals, like I said, that have limited assets and income.
Or lack of means.
Or lack of means. Right. So, yes. So that's kind of what it is in a nutshell.
A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, and they are not, they are vastly different. So what Ben was saying is what we deal with in our office is Medicaid. Medicaid is the primary payer of long-term care services in Pennsylvania. Just to throw some numbers at our listeners, the average cost of nursing home care in Pennsylvania right now is it's close to $10,000 a month. So we help clients get eligible for Medicaid to cover the cost of that care. We also do pre-planning for individuals who feel like, you know, in the future, this going into a long-term care facility, whether it's a nursing home or assisted living, might be, you know, in their future, we'll help them do pre-planning for that so they can protect as much of their assets as they possibly can.
How overwhelming is that when you tell people that? Because I get the impression somebody comes to you, they don't know more than they know, and they're getting information that could be startling. How overwhelming can that be in the midst of having to sort out a possibly family health issue on top of it?
It's extremely overwhelming. You know, I think a lot of our clients come to us for an initial consultation at our office, and they are distraught and they're worried. They're stressed out. I actually was just talking to somebody today that said she needed some answers about care for her mom. She hasn't slept for weeks. She hasn't, you know, she's totally stressed out. But the good news is most of the time, I think, and this particular client left the meeting and she said to me, I feel like I can sleep tonight. And I told her, I said, that means I'm doing my job, because what we need to do is make sure that people understand that this process doesn't have to be scary, but they need to know the facts. They need to know, and they need to know the facts from a from the source that understands how the process works. Half of the problem with long-term care in Pennsylvania is that people hear rumors about certain things. For example, we hear from clients all of the time, Medicaid took my house. That's actually, Medicaid's not coming and stealing your house, right, or locking the doors to, right, your house. What that means is there could be an estate recovery issue because maybe you haven't done proper asset protection for someone that's on Medicaid, for example. And we hear stories all the time about people who are, you know, selling off all of their assets to pay for long-term care because they talked to somebody at the grocery store who said that that's what they should do.
Right.
And so half the battle is telling that person who comes in very stressed out after having talked to the deli person that it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be the same that it was for your neighbor, because if you start working on this stuff early on, we can come up with a plan for you to protect a huge portion of your assets so that you can not have to worry and so that maybe you can sleep at night.
When you talk about early on planning, what is early on time? Well, is there a set, you need to think 6 months before this is an issue, or a year before this is an issue, or just as soon as you can?
I mean as early as possible. And I mean the reality is, and human nature is, a lot of times people just don't do that. I mean what Jen is saying is what you want to do. So generally people in their late 50s, early to mid 60s, I mean ideally that's when you want to start to do the pre-planning. When you are well, you know, when you do have some assets to protect, you don't generally want to wait until you're in your 80s or 90s, or some sudden illness befalls you or your spouse or a loved one, because it's not too late at that time, but you can't really do a lot of pre-planning when you actually find yourself or a loved one in a nursing home. Not to say there's not a lot we can do. There certainly is, like Jen said. You just, ideally the time you want to plan, like I said, you can do as early as possible, but ideally you want to do it, you know, 60s, early 70s, maybe, when generally you and your spouse are fairly healthy, basically. So
if you've got questions, and I know people always do, if you've got questions for Ben or for Jennifer, you can call 866-391-1020. You can also text your questions, that same number, 866-391-1020. We'll be talking for the rest of the hour with Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso. I've got questions. We'll get to mine after this, unless yours come in first, then yours take priority. It's Pittsburgh Works on KDKA. News Radio, AM 1020. It is KDKA. 17 after 7. I'm Eddie Crow sitting in for Robert. We're talking to the elder law attorneys, Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso from the elder law attorney group Zachariah and Brown. You can get a hold of them now by texting or by calling 866-391-1020. You can also get a hold of them by just going to their website, pittsburghelderlaw.com. They've got offices in McKeesport. And where else you got offices? I know that Carl's got an office in Florida.
Yeah, McKeesport. We have offices down in Peters Township and, yep, in Wexford in the Pittsburgh area. And we also, Carl does. Carl Zachariah is also licensed down in Florida. In Pompano Beach, and in Bradenton is where he also has offices.
All right. So. Or you can text your questions now. My question to you too, I walk in and I want to get my life in order somehow magically, and I'm going to put it on your plate. Walk me through a consultation. What questions are you going to be posing to me? What information would I try to have when I come see you?
So we have a process for our consultations, and I think we were talking before about how this process doesn't have to be scary. So we like to make sure that our clients are very comfortable when they come to our office and that they know exactly what's going to happen. So the first thing is, call our office. One of our receptionists will schedule you for an appointment with a specific attorney if you have a request to meet with someone specific or just with one of the attorneys at the office. One of the first things that we ask for before you come to our office is we ask you to fill out a questionnaire beforehand. That will give us a lot of information that we need prior to the meeting, so that the first, you know, it allows us to be really productive in a meeting and in our first consultation, because we have background information about you. We likely have information about you or your loved one's assets. So we can already just kind of, we hit the ground running.
It gives you a head start to actually start addressing it. What are some of the questions in that questionnaire?
So we are asking you, you know, what assets you have, what, you know, for example, real estate, bank accounts, retirement accounts, both for you and your spouse. If your spouse is going into a nursing home, we would need that information for the spouse going into the nursing home and then the spouse who's staying home in the community. If it's for your parents, then we'll need information about their finances. We also will ask if there, you know, there were previous stays in a long-term care facility or any type of facility. We'll ask if the person who's coming in has existing estate planning documents, because often that's a part of the process as well, making sure that person has an updated will, an updated power of attorney, and an updated healthcare power of attorney as well.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, we also talk about their children as well, and we'll ask a number of questions even about how many kids you have, where they live, a lot physically and financially, what is their situation? And a lot of these questions may not make sense at the time when you're filling out our questionnaire, but there is a rhyme and a reason to them, and there's a lot that we can gain from you filling this questionnaire out before you come and see us. Like what Jen was saying, it's like a very good blueprint to help point the meeting in the right direction so things are not kind of scattered. We can oftentimes, we'll just start talking to these individuals and we'll look at the questionnaire and we'll oftentimes be able to answer some of their questions or help them raise questions that they may not know they had.
Jen said something earlier, when people come to you quite often, they are stressed out.
Right.
And it can be financial, but it can be the financial side of the health issue that all of this involves. When they leave, how much of the relief is they're not stressed about the financial, and how much of it is you're walking them through it? Because this sounds like it would be stressful under the best of circumstances to walk through the labyrinth that all of these different things seem to have pathways for.
Well, there's sort of twofold stress in this situation. And that, going back to my example of the person I spoke with earlier, there's the stress of, number one, you know, visiting and caring for and worrying about the health and safety of your parent, making sure they're getting good care at the facility they're at. And then also making sure, you know, knowing, you know, I think especially in Western Pennsylvania, we have this culture of savers, right? Our parents, our grandparents have saved a lot of money. They have a lot of their assets set aside in retirement accounts.
Right.
And so you want to make sure that when you're doing planning for your parents, that they're going to be able to preserve as much of that as possible. And so to answer your question, I think, you know, especially from the financial perspective, when our clients leave, they're able to kind of take a sigh of relief because they know that their parents aren't going to lose everything, that all of their hard-earned money.
Right. And you would look back and say all of that money and now it's going to go away. That would be heartbreaking for anybody, much less seeing that happening with a parent.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the primary reasons why people come and see us, is because they say it almost every time they come and see us. We haven't worked the past 40 or 50 years to lose everything now,
right,
and let everything go out the window to a nursing home or, you know, to whatever, or to the state. And that's one of their biggest fears is, not being able to, you know, getting the care that they need, but at the same time, basically not losing everything they have. And one of the biggest things that they want to talk about is their home. That's one of the primary areas that individuals are concerned about, because oftentimes it's their most highest valued asset is your house, your home you've lived in for the past 40, 50 or 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And often that causes individuals great distress when they come and see us, because they have heard horror stories. And there's a lot of mixed, you know, fact and fiction that go into those horror stories, but some of it may be true, some of it may be not, you know, as true as they think it is, or it may not have to happen to them with the proper planning. So,
well, is that possible? What did you say? You hear stories, Medicaid took my house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what we talk with clients about is making sure that those assets are protected and that we plan for them. For example, if you have a married couple and they're applying for Medicaid, let's say, for example, the husband is going into the nursing home.
Okay.
You will want to, as quickly as you can, and you're allowed to do this under the Medicaid rules because transfers between spouses are not going to cause you an issue for a penalty for Medicaid. But as quickly as you can, you're going to want to get the deed for the house, even if usually the house is in husband and wife's name.
Right.
You're going to get the deed for the house into the name of the spouse that's in the community. The reason you're doing that is because when a person is a Medicaid recipient, they can be subject to what's called an estate recovery claim. So basically what that is that the state will file a claim against any assets in that person's sole name for the amount of Medicaid that has been paid out for that on that person's behalf.
When you say deed it to the person in the community that's still in the community. You're not talking about the person that's going into the healthcare community.
Right. No, okay. We're talking about the person still living at home and not in a nursing home.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to text or call with a question, it's 866-391-1020. This question just got texted. This is how little I know. I'm going to ask you the question. I don't even know what the question means.
Okay.
How does Medicaid annuities help you to help your clients in a nursing home?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there is something, what they're referring to there is something called a Medicaid compliant annuity. And this is a financial vehicle of sorts, not something you're going to go and buy, you know, right now or tomorrow. You're not going to call your financial advisor or your insurance broker and say, I want to buy a Medicaid compliant annuity to protect my assets if I need Medicaid in the future. Basically, the sole purpose of this is if it happens where you have an individual that is in a nursing home or going to be applying for waiver services in the community at home, you can basically place assets into this Medicaid compliant annuity, oftentimes for the benefit of the community spouse. And it would basically create an income stream for them, which would protect their assets. So there's a lot going on there. But like I said, it's basically a financial vehicle that we use fairly often, especially for married couples, in order to protect their assets. And like I said, it's not something you're going to go and buy on your own. You're not going to go to your financial advisor tomorrow and tell them you want to put money into a Medicaid compliant annuity. Basically, the sole purpose is somebody's applying for Medicaid and you want to protect their assets. And so that only at that time would you use this Medicaid compliant annuity to do that.
And
so,
you say use this annuity. Mm-hmm. What is using the annuity? Taking the money back?
No, yeah, basically you would use it as in you would purchase it. Basically, you would put a premium of some amount of money into this annuity, and it would basically create an immediate income stream for an individual. So basically, you in essence would say you put $100,000 into this Medicaid compliant annuity.
Okay.
And then over the next, 10 to 12 months, it would pay out, $10,000 to $12,000 a month over that time. So minus a small processing fee of a couple thousand dollars, you're essentially getting your money back. So like I said, if it sounds too good to be true, it's kind of not. There's a catch 22 that goes along with this.
Right.
Well, where
my first question, you just said is, okay, right. So if I show up with money and I buy this, whatever you want to call it, it's going to return, it sounded like 10, 12%.
Well, no, not 10, 12%. It's basically, I'm just saying, if you put this, say you put $120,000 into an annuity.
Okay.
And it pays out over the next year. So you're going to get a return of $10,000 a month. Basically, you're just getting your money back in 12 equal monthly increments, right? So, so it's like I said, it's kind of complicated. That question I ask is very loaded, but like I said, it's not to confuse everybody out there that's listening. But like I said, it is something we use a lot to help protect your assets. So,
What would be the time you would tell somebody, no, don't do that?
If you're going to try and do it on your own, I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to do it. So yeah, there's got to be very specific reasons why you would want to do that. So like a reason not to is if you don't need Medicaid. And if say you think, oh, well, I might need Medicaid down the road in 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to buy this now. That's not the reason to do it. So you would not do that. So you have to have basically an immediate need for Medicaid. And at that time is when you would put money into this annuity, and it would create an immediate income stream to pay back to you or your spouse, essentially.
Are they not going to go after? I knew I was asking a question I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I do this. I put in $100,000 in the annuity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I leave it there. Then all of a sudden I need it. Mm-hmm. Are they not going to go after that as assets that I previously had?
Well, the thing is, it's actually not considered an asset for Medicaid purposes. And the reason it's not, which is the catch 22 I was getting to, is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is the primary beneficiary on this annuity up to the amount that they paid for that individual to be on Medicaid. So that's the catch 22. So that's why it's not an asset. So that's
this type of annuity is very different from any other annuity that listeners might be familiar with. And there are very strict rules as to how it should be applied. So, caution there is that do not try to do that on your own. Make sure you're using an elder law attorney or someone that understands how they work, because you could, you could really make a big mistake there.
I get confused asking the questions, so that tells me I need expert help. Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso are our expert help. We're talking about elder law with the Zachariah and Brown elder law attorneys. If you've got a question, you can call it. You can text it, 866-391-1020. You can also email if it's long-term. Try and confuse me even more with big words that I don't understand. That is Dollar Bank Instant Access is kdkaradio.com. After the news, we'll be back with Ben and with Jennifer. It's Pittsburgh Works on AM 1020 KDKA. Pittsburgh Works tonight with Zachariah and Brown, elder law attorneys, with me, Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso, and they're answering questions. If you've got questions, they'll help you out. If you can't call tonight, you can certainly go on the web page, PittsburghElderLaw.com. But if you want to take advantage, asking questions, 866-391-1020. You can also text 866-391-1020. Bill in the North Hills. Bill, thank you for waiting. What's your question?
Yes, sir. I have, beside my home, I have other several properties. And I've been thinking about signing those properties over to my children. Is there a time frame that I have to do that in the event that I would have to go into a home?
So, Bill, Medicaid has a five-year or 60-month look-back period. So you want to make sure that you're not doing something like that within a five-year time frame of the potential of needing long-term care. You have to understand that if you are just doing a deed transfer to your children and basically just giving them the property without them purchasing it from you, then that is considered a gift for Medicaid purposes. So what that means is if you were to transfer all of your properties to your children tomorrow and then you needed long-term care services later this year and you were applying for Medicaid, you would be penalized for those transfers.
Okay.
This is an example of anything you're considering, working through it, the sooner the better, isn't it?
Right. So what you might want to consider as an alternative is maybe having a conversation with an attorney about setting up a trust. Maybe you want to put the properties into an irrevocable trust for asset protection purposes. But what you really need to do is, talk to us or give our office a call, set up a consultation so that we can go through all of your circumstances, both your age, your health, your finances, and see what would be best for you in your particular scenario.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. You're very welcome.
Bill, I appreciate the call. Let's talk to Elaine in Homestead. Elaine, thank you for calling. What's your question for Ben and for Jennifer?
Yes, thank you very much. Jennifer and Ben, I heard you mention a term before, waiver.
Yes.
First of all, what exactly does that mean, and how would that affect a disabled senior, late 70s, low income, who's in an apartment but wishes to continue to live independently?
Right. So, yeah, well, what we're referring to when we refer to waiver or waiver services, that's basically receiving Medicaid at home. So, you can receive a nursing facility level of care at home through the waiver program. So that's just kind of a term of art we use when we're referring to individuals who get Medicaid at home as opposed to getting Medicaid in a nursing home. So most people think you have to go to a nursing home and Medicaid may pay for your care once you're there. But a lot of people don't realize you can just stay living in your own home or your apartment, wherever you are, and Medicaid may be able to pay for services in your very own home. And that's just what they call waiver services. So that's just getting Medicaid at home, basically.
I see. Mm-hmm. And what about is there a maximum of assets that you have to have?
There is, yes.
For example, I have a funeral fund I've set aside for prepaid.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That would be an exempt asset. So that does not count against the number of assets you can have. So.
Okay.
So for the waiver program, you are applying for Medicaid in the same way that you would if you were in a nursing home. So you need to establish financial eligibility. You'd also need to be medically eligible, but like Ben said, you're applying to receive services, long-term care services, but they're being received at home instead of in a nursing home.
I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elaine. You talk about home services and mm-hmm. the waiver. My first thought is, why wouldn't Medicaid be open to that? Is it cheaper for somebody, from Medicaid's point of view, is that cheaper to have them receive services at home
than
at a facility?
Yeah, and that would make perfect common sense, wouldn't it? But a lot of times that's not how the government views things, and that's not how they act a lot of times. So there is income limits to getting waiver services at home. So your income, for all intents and purposes, cannot be over $2,313 a month. But there are no income limits, essentially, for getting Medicaid in a nursing home, where it's much more expensive for the government to house you as opposed to at home. So it's completely backwards.
So, I could make too much and force the government to spend more on me rather than them just leaving me alone and letting me.
Correct. Right. So a lot of individuals that can get a nursing facility level of care at home, just like they could in a nursing home, could save the government a lot of money by staying in their home and having services come in there. But a lot of times it forces individuals to have to go to a nursing home because their income is too high. Well, by too high, I mean it's over $2,300 a month.
Which, so 25 grand a year.
Right.
Ballpark.
Right. So, yeah, if it's over that, like I said, for all intents and purposes, you would not be eligible to get this Medicaid waiver services at home. There are exceptions to that, don't get me wrong, but for our purposes, basically your income would be too high.
What would you be able to do if you're in that situation? And we've spoken of this. Most people don't want to go into a facility.
Right.
And the ability to get their treatment done in their home is what they want to do. It sounds like you'd have to get rid of your source of income to qualify?
Yeah, essentially, and that's what I was, we're talking about. And on a case-by-case basis, what you're referring to is that if you have a situation where your income, your monthly income is within $500 over that $2,313 we're talking about, you may be able to spend down some of your income by putting it into what we call a pooled special needs trust. So you're basically spending down your income every month in order to qualify for Medicaid at home. So on a case-by-case basis, the government will approve that. There's not a blanket approval for this kind of planning. So basically, what we're saying is you definitely cannot do this on your own. They only approve it on a case-by-case basis. It's fairly complicated, but there is hope for individuals who are listening, and they're like, well, my income's over $2,313 a month, so I'm definitely not going to qualify. Well, if you're within $500 of that limit, there may be things we can do to help you get services at home.
So you're not out of luck, but it's not a simple process.
Right.
No.
Correct. Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso, my guests. We're talking with the elder law attorneys, Zachariah Brown. Your questions at 866-391-1020. That's a call or a text. It's KDKA Radio. News Radio AM 1020. It is Pittsburgh Works. We've been talking tonight with Jennifer Biddle and Ben Urso from Zachariah Brown, the elder law attorneys. Before we get any further, we're almost out of time. I want to make sure everybody knows all the different ways they can get in touch with you, because anytime we do this, after we're done, I get texts and I get messages, and I wanted to ask them this. Let everybody know all the venues where you can be reached.
So we have offices all over the city, basically. So hopefully there's one that's close to you. We have an office in McMurray in Washington County. We have an office in Wexford in the North Hills. And then we also have an office in McKeesport in the Versailles Borough area. So one of the best ways to find information about us and more about the attorneys at the firm and what we do is to visit our website at pittsburgelderlaw.com. But if you know that you have very specific questions and it's time for you to set up a consultation to talk to us, you can call our office. It's 724-942-6200.
How much of it is people don't know what they don't know? Does that make sense? I mean, you're talking about specific versus general questions. Mm-hmm. What general questions would I be asking myself where the answer should be, I need to get a hold of you guys, the general stuff, because when it gets specific, that's usually, especially with healthcare, that's when the stress comes in. So general's way easier to take that first step.
I think if you're not sure whether or not you're at the age or at the magic stage of your life when you think it's necessary, that's probably a good time to call. Because, you know, if we say maybe doing some sort of aggressive planning is not best for you right now, but we establish a relationship, we establish a comfort level, and then maybe we talk to you when you're 60, and then we touch base with you again, you know, closer to your late 60s, and that's when we start doing some different planning. But I think, you know, generally speaking, if it's something that's on your mind and you're not sure as to whether or not you should ask us, just call our office and set up a meeting.
What is aggressive planning versus general planning?
So aggressive planning would probably be in the scenario where you are, you know, getting pretty close to having a long-term care need. So we really need to, get trust set up. Mm-hmm. We need to really, you know, quickly change your estate planning documents if that's necessary. And then, you know, the most aggressive planning we do is kind of what we call crisis planning. That's when someone is either currently placed in a nursing home or they are in imminent need of being placed in a skilled nursing facility.
That's when the situation is right now and nothing has been planned for the right now situation.
Right.
Right. And that's when we talk, that's when we possibly go into those Medicaid compliant annuities that individual is talking about. So that's, right. That happens at the crisis planning stage. So, and just to add to what Jen was saying, I mean, to answer your question even further, just a good place to start a lot of times are just with your basic estate planning documents. A lot of individuals either don't have a will, financial power of attorney, and a healthcare power of attorney, or they do and it's 30 years old and it's extremely outdated. So if nothing else, that's the best place to start. So you want to have a good, solid will that has a lot of long-term care language in it, along with a lot of special needs language in it. And if you have any minor children, you want to make sure that they're cared for, that they have a guardian or a custodian set up.
Right.
Along with that, you want to have a solid financial power of attorney in place, along with a solid healthcare power of attorney and a living will. So if you have those three documents, then you're in pretty good shape. And then that's a really good place to start a conversation, and we can go from there.
Give me a timeline on how long it would take. Run those documents again. I'm going to check them off in my head because I don't think I have any of them.
Right, right. So, yeah, so you have your last will and testament.
But it's well over 20 years
old.
Right,
just like I said, a lot of them are old. So then you have your financial power of attorney. That's another document.
That's the weakest power I've ever seen, but okay. Yeah. I don't have that.
Right, so that's just somebody that's really responsible for just like what it sounds, handling your financial affairs,
okay,
being able to buy and sell property for you, enter into contracts, having access to your online digital accounts, having access to your mail. All of these things have to be enumerated in your financial power of attorney. The third document is your healthcare power of attorney, and along with that is your living will, which deals with like end of life issues and that kind of thing, such as do not resuscitate and you know, a lot of those issues. So.
And Eddie, you said before, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
So a lot of times, I would say actually probably 90% of the time, we have a client who wants to schedule a consultation with us to discuss a particular issue. And they think that they know, you know, they think they've talked to people, they think that they know exactly what they need and what needs to be done. And they come into the office and they realize that, okay, what they thought really was the issue is not, but there's actually a couple other things in terms of maybe estate planning or pre-planning for long-term care that need to happen just based on an hour-long consultation with the attorneys in our office.
How many people come in with no information versus utterly incorrect information?
I think utterly incorrect information happens a lot more often than people with no information. Because
where does that come from?
You're just asking. I think it comes from a place of being stressed out about what's the next step. And then you ask everybody you know. And the problem with that is you're asking, you know, I think Carl Zachariah, who's one of the partners at our firm, says, you know, you're asking everybody but the right person. You're okay. Asking all the people that you're sitting next to at the bar or all the people at the grocery store, when you should really be saving yourself the stress of asking every person you know and just asking an attorney who understands the process.
You're asking everybody around you, hoping that somebody gives you an answer that will provide less stress.
Right,
but it ends up providing more stress because you get 20 different answers from 20 different people.
Right. So just like a lifetime of talking to individuals, family, and friends and getting 50 different opinions about it. And so that's why it just causes a great deal of stress for you. But just come and talk to somebody that really knows what they're talking about. So, and like I said, a lot of times, like Jen was saying earlier in the show, we just provide peace of mind to individuals, if nothing else. So
that you go to work, have people come into your office that are stressed and they leave less stressed.
Oftentimes, yes. Most, almost 100% of the time.
That speaks volumes. Ben Urso and Jennifer Biddle have been my guests with the elder law group Zachariah and Brown. Don't forget their website. It is PittsburghElderLaw.com. It's Pittsburgh Works on KDKA.